This is an iHeart podcast.
Okay, let's talk about retribution, the John Bolton raid. Lee Zeldin is here doing a great job at the EPA. We'll talk to him about that. We have all that, a pastor, and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, before we get started on the meat and potatoes portion of the show on I'm Right, we have to honor the passing of a legend. Donald McPherson is his name. He was the last surviving ace from World War II. We developed a plane called the Hellcat. World War II buffs will, of course, know what the Hellcat is. The Hellcat, taking off and landing on aircraft carriers. Donald McPherson, at one point in time, shot down five Japanese planes, got the Congressional Gold Medal, just a stud in every sense of the word, a complete stud. And he just passed at the age of 103. Now, that's obviously a wonderful life, a life well lived. If I'm being honest, it saddens me a great deal that they're almost all gone now. Almost all those World War II veterans are gone. You know, Father Time is undefeated. And rest in peace, warrior. Appreciate you very much. All right. Now, let's talk about retribution, communism, the government, everything, the John Bolton raid. By the way, right when the John Bolton raid, the raid of John Bolton's home, right when that happened over the weekend, I went and did a 6-7 minute video on YouTube, on my YouTube channel. I do that from time to time. Go subscribe to that at Jesse Kelly DC on YouTube. Go watch it, subscribe to it, enjoy yourself. It's free of charge, of course. Now let's discuss it. John Bolton did what? Well, he did what apparently every single person who works in the government does. He got sticky fingers with classified documents. Thought they were his personal possession. There's value there. Took them home. He's accused of sending them to people, emailing them to family, being unbelievably careless with critically important pieces of information. Do keep in mind that foreign adversaries like China and many, many others have the ability to take anything from your email they want to take. So when you take classified documents and you're sending them from your Gmail account, you are exposing the United States of America to bad, bad, bad things. So let's talk about this. What did John Bolton have to say when Donald Trump's home was raided?
If he has anything like what the complaint, what the indictment alleges, and of course the government will have to prove it, then he has committed very serious crimes. This is a devastating indictment. I speak here as an alumnus of the Justice Department myself, because not only is it powerful, it's very narrowly tailored. They didn't throw everything up against the wall to see what would stick. This really is a rifle shot, and I think it should be the end of Donald Trump's political career.
Right? I mean, he practically had the vapors over there at the thought of Mar-a-Lago being raided, and now he wakes up and his home has federal agents inside of it, federal agents walking out with boxes. And that brings me, of course, to what the reaction has been to this over and over and over and over again. If you've been watching the television over the weekend, you saw the left using words like retribution.
President Trump promised retribution against his political enemies, and there is no doubt that he is serious about keeping that promise.
I think this is clearly retribution. I mean, the idea that what they just picked John Bolton, a prominent critic of the president at random, what the president is trying to do here is very systemic and systematic, and that is anyone who stands up to the president, anyone who criticizes the president, anyone who says anything adverse to the president's interests, gets the full weight of the federal government brought down on them.
Okay. So let's talk about retribution. What if it is? And obviously there's a part of that. What if it is retribution? Well, yeah, it should be. You see, what they did, what the communists have done with the government over the decades is they have conquered it. They took over all the agencies. They took over every part of it. And they've taken all those government guns that were supposed to be pointed outward, protecting us from foreign adversaries, and they slowly but surely did what they always do, and they took those guns and pointed them inward at their political opponents. Yeah, did you see J.D. Vance sit down with Kristen Welker? Look at this.
But you know, a lot of people have already looked at this and said, this looks a lot like retribution. Is this retribution?
Well, who has said it looks a lot like retribution? People who tried to throw Donald Trump in prison for completely fake charges that were later thrown out by multiple different courts. I suspect that if the media and the American people let this case actually unfold, if they let the investigation unfold as it's currently doing, they're going to find out that what we're doing is being very deliberate and being very driven by the national interest and by the law here, and that's as it should be.
Remember what they did to Donald Trump? But you know what? Set that aside. Set that aside. Set aside what they did to Donald Trump, because that's well documented. You know about that. They tried to bankrupt him. They tried to throw him in prison in New York. They tried to throw him in prison in Georgia. Everyone seemed to forget about that. They had a special prosecutor. They tried to throw the Republican nominee in prison, in federal prison. They weren't going for fines. They weren't going for a slap on the wrist. They turned the FBI and CIA loose against their political opponent and tried to throw him in prison on ridiculous charges that to this day nobody can even lay out what he was accused of doing. So they just made things up. But again, set aside Donald Trump. Let's talk about what the communists did to you when they got full power. They sent the FBI into your church. Here in the United States of America, the land of the free, we had FBI special agents in the parking lot of school board meetings, jotting down license plate numbers to open up domestic terrorist files on moms who were mad that their kids were being taught a bunch of gay stuff in schools. That's what the communists did. Mark Hauck had ridiculous charges brought up against him, and an FBI SWAT team sent to his door with guns pointed in his face, in his family's face, because the communists were angry that Roe versus Wade got overturned and they wanted to take it out on somebody. This is just a taste of what the communists did when they got power. Remember all those times they tried to call you a white supremacist?
According to the intelligence community, terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland today. Not ISIS, not Al-Qaeda, white supremacists.
In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocated for the superiority of the white race.
A huge chunk of those domestic terrorism investigations involve racially motivated, violent extremist motivated terrorist attacks. And the majority of those, of the racially motivated violent extremist attacks, are fueled by some kind of white supremacy.
Well, that didn't make sense, did it? Because you've never met a white supremacist in your life. So let me explain it to you. This was in an effort to classify their political opponents as terrorists so they could justify sending government guns against you. What happened during Joe Biden's 4 years was the most evil stuff the United States government has ever done, because the communists conquered it and aimed all their guns at you, at me, at Donald Trump. Now, let's talk about something even worse. They're going to take power again. I don't think it's going to be soon. They've lost their minds right now. But you're not a baby. You're not a child. You know how it works. At some point in time, they will take power again. What is stopping them from doing all that again? What will stop them? Their morality? Don't make me laugh. The only chance we have at getting these people to back off and not do what they did before is making them afraid. The next time a communist puts in a communist FBI director and has a meeting with him and says, hey, I want these Republicans to go to prison, the only thing that might hold that next FBI director back is watching what happens now to the people who did it before. And him saying to himself, I'd love to, sir. I'd love to go arrest these Republicans, but I don't want to go to prison like the last guy did. Retribution? You bet it is. And it should be. Because when you are in a war for power, and we very much are in a war for power, you had better hit back and let the enemy know that it can come right back to him, so he better mind his P's and Q's. That's how wars are fought. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We're going to talk to Ilya Shapiro about the Supreme Court and other things in a moment. Before we talk to him, let me talk to you about your cell phone. See, Pure Talk, I'm proud of them. I'm glad the United States of America is slowly coming around to the fact that you should hire Americans. But Pure Talk's been doing this forever. Pure Talk's always made that a priority. When you get a hold of somebody at Pure Talk, they're not clicking into the phone and using some accent you've never heard before from some third world dump. It's an American who speaks English. Pure Talk loves this country. You will pay less for your cell phone service. Exact same service, by the way. They're on the same towers. You'll pay less. You'll patronize an American-loving business. That's who gets my business. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. The Supreme Court's confusing. It involves a bunch of lawyering and legal stuff, and I don't know, they even speak Latin every now and then, so I have to bring on Ilya Shapiro from time to time to help me understand what's going on and why it's going on. So joining me now, my friend, author of one of his most wonderful books, Lawless, Ilya Shapiro. Okay, Ilya, the Supreme Court, the National Institutes of Health, what's happening and why is it happening?
Well, res ipsa loquitur, Jesse, since you love that Latin. Look, this is one of Trump's executive orders, or one of the actions by the agencies to use its lawful discretion to decide who gets grants and who doesn't. In this case, cutting funding to DEI initiatives in the public health space at the National Institutes for Health. And here, a lower court had blocked that. The Supreme Court, by a 5-4 decision, blocked that block, if you will, so the administration can continue to withhold that funding pending further litigation.
Okay, Ketanji Brown Jackson, who obviously gets mocked, apparently even by leftists these days, called this, what'd she say? Accused the Supreme Court of playing Calvin ball. What is she talking about?
Well, Calvin Ball, if I remember my comic books correctly, is making up the rules as you get along. And she's making the point that the only rule that the Supreme Court majority has is Trump wins. I think it's a completely unfair account. It's also not very well reasoned. And indeed, in a different context, at the end of the term in June, her colleague Justice Amy Coney Barrett effectively called out Justice Jackson for playing Calvin Ball in her reasoning. That is saying, you know, dismissing with the back of her hand, saying that what Justice Jackson was saying has no basis in 200 years of precedent or constitutional text or history. I don't like it when the justices go after each other or accuse each other of acting in bad faith. It's okay to criticize their opinions. I criticize their opinions all the time, and these are better lawyers than I am, so they should do that. But I don't think it's fair here that what Justice Jackson is saying, she's basically saying, I don't have any legal arguments to make, so I'm just going to pound the table.
Ilya, obviously every day we wake up, there's a new judge from some lower court somewhere blocking this or blocking that and making an idiot of himself. How much do they how much have they conquered the courts versus us? Do we have a bunch of judges, like endless amounts of theirs and not that many of ours? What's the balance like?
Well, at any given time, about half the federal judiciary is appointed by Republican presidents, about half by Democratic presidents. Of course, the Supreme Court, it's about 6-3 at this point. I wouldn't call it judicial activism, as your thing on the screen said, because activism at this point just means a decision I don't like, and these accusations come from the left, the right, whatever. We take each ruling as it comes, and the thing is, we're at the culmination of a long trend where divergent theories of interpretation, views on the Constitution, map onto partisan identification at a time when the parties themselves are more ideologically sorted and polarized than they've been since at least the Civil War. And of course, parties challenging a Republican president will file in D.C. and Boston and Seattle. Parties challenging a Democratic president will file in Texas. These things get accelerated up to the Supreme Court. That's why you see a lot of action on what some call the emergency docket or the interim relief docket, basically the stuff that's not the normal months and months of briefing and argument process. But we live in polarized times, and the courts reflect that.
The Supreme Court hasn't smacked around the lower courts in the way much of the right wants them to, meaning, you know, Roberts saying, stop this, you're not allowed to do this anymore. Are they going to, or is it all operating the way it should?
They're starting to bit by bit. And you saw this last month in July. There are a couple of rulings where the Supreme Court, not even a 5-4 or 6-3, but basically everyone other than Jackson and Sotomayor were saying, cut it out. We've already ruled this way. I might not like it, says Kagan, but you have to follow what the Supreme Court does. So bit by bit, they're giving more instruction. But look, the court is not a legislative body, so it's always reactive. It's always a step behind what lower courts are doing. And I think this will get resolved in the end, but it takes some time.
Ilya, Clarence Thomas, who I adore, Alito, you know, the ones we all adore, they're getting old. Are they going to retire?
So it's still much more likely than not that the Republicans keep the Senate after the 26 elections, after next year's elections. And so to the extent politics is part of the process, I wouldn't look until 2027 to start speculating. Beyond that, both of them love the power they're having. Justice Thomas is the senior most associate justice. Justice Alito gets to write opinions in lots of big cases. They seem relatively healthy and vigorous and energetic. And for Thomas specifically, if he serves through May of 28, basically through the end of that term, he becomes the longest ever serving justice. So I would start looking at some speculation, depending on what Republican prospects are for the White House in 28. But Thomas certainly wouldn't go until I think he sets that benchmark.
Who's Trump's best pick? Gorsuch?
I don't want to pick favorites. I guess I think Gorsuch probably is my favorite of Trump's three picks. Yes, Trump now is saying he wants people more like Alito and Thomas than any of the three that he picked. Frankly, most Federalist Society members or others of the kind of traditional conservative legal movement would probably be in agreement with that. And there are plenty of young judges, all of whom Trump appointed, younger federal judges, who clerked for Alito and Thomas. And so there's a very good farm team ready to be called up to serve if needed.
What's coming on the Supreme Court? Big rulings, small rulings?
Well, the traditional beginning of the term is the first Monday in October. And we do have already a case challenging Colorado's ban on talk therapy for gender dysphoria. So recall last term in the Scrimeti case, the court okayed Tennessee's ban on mutilation for gender purposes of minors. This is kind of the flip side, talk therapy that's being banned in case someone is, might have some mental illness or isn't sure about their gender, what have you. That's a big one. A couple of big political law cases. We haven't had campaign finance and political law on the docket in a while. Several opportunities for the court to weigh in that will have direct impact even with the 26 election, let alone 28.
Ilio, what about birthright citizenship? Are we ever going to get a ruling and a correct one on this insane anchor baby problem we have?
I predict that this case will come before the Supreme Court at least one more time without a decision on the merits of whether birthright citizenship is constitutionally required. Because even after the Supreme Court ruled to get rid of universal injunctions, nationwide injunctions by district court, already other lower courts have certified class actions to challenge Trump's birthright citizenship executive order, as well as states saying that they need nationwide injunctions to be able to vindicate their rights. So there's one more beat on the procedural stuff before we're even going to get to that big, meaty constitutional issue.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. All right. The EPA, big cheese, Lee Zeldin, doing amazing work at the EPA. No one talks about it because EPA isn't in the news every day. He's been doing awesome stuff. He's going to join us next. We'll riff about some things. Before we do that, let me talk to you about something. About your energy level. How do you feel in the afternoon, at the end of the day when you get home? Ready? Ready to go for a walk? Make dinner? Eat dinner? Hang out? Or are you done? You know, you don't have to be done. You can be full of pep and in a good mood all the time. If you get some natural herbal supplements in your body, you can feel so much better than you feel now. Let Chalk make you feel better. Natural herbal supplements. I personally, I take a male vitality stack every single day. I never miss it. Do the same. They have a female vitality stack for the ladies. Give it 90 days. You'll be ready to go even at the end of the day. It's amazing. I even sleep better. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. I'm floored that the government is actually shrinking. The government never shrinks. It never does. In my 44 years on this planet, just government grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. We're looking by year end at 300,000 fewer federal workers. Gosh, that's amazing. And joining me now, somebody who's been a big part of that. So happy for him. Happy we have him. The EPA Administrator, Lee Zeldin. Hey, Lee. Well done. What are you guys doing over there firing everybody?
Oh, listen, we came in at the beginning of January and had a lot on our plate of what we needed to tackle operationally with policy. On the operational side, the president signed an executive order ending COVID-era remote work. We had to get people back into the building. The numbers I had asked for, just to get a sense of how many people were even coming in. Average attendance on Mondays and Fridays last year was 5 to 8%. The record high day of attendance was 31%. We went through reorganizations. When we came in, our number was about 16,155. The number's gonna be right-sized, about 12,500. And we will actually get more of our statutory obligations fulfilled at 23% less than what we came in on. It's just about priorities. We inherited a massive, massive backlog to pesticide review, new chemical review, small refinery exemptions, state implementation plans, and we should be prioritizing first and foremost the statutory obligations in front of this agency, statutes out there by Congress. On the policy side, we inherited what were a lot of decisions from 2023 and 2024 from the Biden administration, where they were getting a lot of new rules and regulations over the finish line, trying to strangulate out of existence entire sectors of our economy, specifically our energy economy, but not just them. And we're trying to reverse that damage as quickly as we can, doing everything at once. And the last thing that I'll mention that we had to tackle, again, we'll just do it everything at the same time, is tracking down all of the money that was going through the EPA. Tens of billions of dollars. I've now canceled over $29 billion worth of grants since I've gotten here. We found all sorts of money just riddled with self-dealing, conflicts of interest, unqualified recipients, reduced agency oversight, money going to well-connected left-wing activist NGOs. And we come in and we're not trying to get that money redirected towards right-wing activist NGOs. This isn't about ideologically just trying to get it to well-connected, you know, friends on the right. This is about the taxpayer. And that money should be fought for all American taxpayers and not lit on fire. So yeah, a lot of priorities, staff size, money spent, regulations. We'll do more deregulation in 1 year than entire federal governments have done across all agencies, across entire presidencies, just at the EPA.
Tell me about these regulations. What kind of regulations have we been living under in this country? Because people don't realize what a regulatory state we have right now.
So there was a Supreme Court decision called Loper-Bright that came out in recent years overturning the Chevron doctrine, essentially the Supreme Court saying that agencies like the EPA should not be getting creative in giving themselves their own power, that the EPA shouldn't be saying that where a statute is silent, that it should be interpreted to mean, well, if the statute doesn't say we can't, then I guess that means we can. No, and the major policy doctrines also says that if you're going to do trillions of dollars of regulation, well, maybe that should be something debated and voted on by Congress as opposed to bureaucrats at an agency in Washington, D.C. So we come in, we want to follow the rule of law. We want to follow the plain reading of the law. And these rules, these regulations over the course of the last couple of years, not just the last couple of years, but that's a lot of decisions that were made where they're trying to get rid of the coal industry, for example. So we come in and we're going to respect the Supreme Court decisions in West Virginia versus EPA, Michigan versus EPA, and more. And we proposed that we're going to rescind the Clean Power Plan 2.0. Sounds good until you get into the details. The 2024 mercury and air toxic standards. Well, of course we need mercury and air toxic standards, and we still will have mercury and air toxic standards, but the 2024 mercury and air toxic standards will get reconsidered. Again, just like the Clean Power Plan and some of these other rules that came out, trying to get all these coal plants across America to just shut down. We sent to Congress here in D.C., three Biden EPA waivers that were given the state of California that they used for their electric vehicle mandate and other tailpipe emissions. Congress then reviewed it, and under the Congressional Review Act, they passed three bills signed by the president getting rid of those EPA waivers. We also proposed for rescission the 2009 Obama EPA endangerment finding, and all other regulations that followed based on the endangerment finding for light, medium, and heavy-duty vehicles. We're talking about $1 trillion with the most conservative estimate that would get saved. So there you're talking vehicles. You could talk energy policy, manufacturing, and so much more. The consequences of these policies are real. We're choosing to protect the environment and grow the economy. It's not a binary choice. We're not going to choose between the two. The American public choose both. We choose both.
Can you elaborate a little bit on our refining, our ability to refine here? Because people don't understand how much that has been taken away, how critically important it is, and then how hard it is to build them again. You don't build them in a month.
President Trump is talking about unleashing energy dominance. He formed the National Energy Dominance Council. Doug Burgum as chair, as Secretary of Interior. Chris Wright, vice chair, Secretary of Energy. I'm on that. Secretary Lutnick and others. We meet with the president frequently to discuss policy as it relates to the National Energy Dominance Council. We want to, President Trump wants to, unleash energy dominance right here in our own country. We tap into our own energy supply better than so many other countries do elsewhere around the world. So it's better for our economy, our national security, but also for our environment. We also need to build more pipelines. President Trump has been pushing a new LNG pipeline over the course of hundreds of miles in Alaska, right next to the Trans-Alaska pipeline. He's been pushing Constitution Pipeline, which would deliver natural gas from Pennsylvania into New England. NESE pipeline, which would be built delivering natural gas onto Long Island. There's a big natural gas pipeline that's been getting advanced in Southwest United States, delivering from New Mexico and into Arizona. And the list goes on. So it's not just about tapping into what is under us, but making sure it could get to these residents and businesses across the entire country, keep costs down, be able to create jobs, and allow Americans to be able to afford to heat their home and to fill their car up and not have to rely on foreign sources of energy in order to do it.
Lee, what's cloud seeding? You see a million internet crackpot conspiracy theories on what it is, what it isn't, what's happening, but what is it? Didn't we make it rain?
Yes, that is something that is allowed in some states here in the United States. It's not national act of Congress that has cloud seeding all across the entire country, but some states have been supportive of cloud seeding specifically to be able to create elements to make it rain. And that's something that I've been outspoken on with concerns as it relates to different forms of weather modification, geoengineering. I believe that a lot of this has not been thoroughly researched and vetted out enough. And, I just did an interview with another person in the media on the right a few days ago, where that person pointed out, we shouldn't be playing God with these activities. And gosh, the point is well taken, especially when this hasn't been thoroughly, adequately, substantially vetted out and researched. In the past, the federal government has even funded some of these activities. There's some talk where private actors are discussing large investments to scale up their activity of geoengineering. In one case, we're aware of an entity that has not scaled up, but they want to put sulfur dioxide into the stratosphere, which causes acid rain, and they want to do it with a desire to advance stratospheric aerosol injection, solar radiation modification, to try to get the sun to deflect off of different levels of our atmosphere so that they can help combat global warming. But instead of these entities going rogue and being able to have a free run to be able to do this, this is something that I've been outspoken about and educating the public. I believe that the American public should know whatever I get to know, whatever I know as administrator of EPA. And I would also say that this isn't just about the United States. There are other countries that have been pursuing geoengineering. And even if it was stopped here in the United States, if it's happening elsewhere, what happens over the Asian continent or over the European continent impacts other continents, including our own. Just because it happens out of our country doesn't mean that it impacts us. And then my last thing I'll say is this, my only word of advice for anyone listening who cares about these issues, you have to be accurate. We all have to be accurate in how we discuss it. I have found some people confusing different terms where they'll describe, they'll show a picture or a video and they'll describe it as something other than what it actually is. It's very important for credibility of the argument to make sure that everyone is communicating here accurately with what exactly you're showing in that picture and that video. That's going to be key. But I think a lot of people in this country just don't, they've just ignored this issue. They say if anyone talking about it must be wearing a tinfoil hat, conspiracy theorist, and none of it's true. We put up on our webpage, epa.gov/geoengineering, everything that we were able to collect after I was sworn in. And I told the staff here at EPA, I have a lot of questions. Here are my questions. Whatever the answers are, I'm not trying to bias the answers. I just want to know what the answer is, what the fact is, what the truth is. And whatever you tell me, I'm going to share publicly because I don't see any reason whatsoever for me to be holding anything back. We should be fully transparent. Whether that proves a theory true or proves a theory untrue, we should just be telling the public whatever it is we know.
Lee, thank you so much for the work you're doing, brother. Appreciate you. I appreciate sleep, too. I'm a huge sleep fan. And as you get older, it's not as easy to come by, right? It's just not. When you're 10 years old, you go to sleep for 12 hours. No problem. You sleep on a rock. When you get older, your shoulder hurts, stress, wake up about things. That's why I'm a big believer in Dream Powder from Beam. Because, sometimes you need something to help you go to sleep, but all that stuff makes you feel horrible in the morning. You don't feel rested. You don't feel like you had good natural sleep. You feel like you didn't sleep at all. But Dream Powder is different because, as you can see, it's natural. Or natural things. It's all natural stuff. It's a cup of hot chocolate, and who doesn't love hot chocolate? My favorite is the cinnamon chocolate. I need a good night's sleep. I go have a cup of hot chocolate about a half hour before bed. Sometimes I sit there and sip it in bed, knock out, sleep like a baby, and wake up not groggy the next day. Try it. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Women are the kind of people that people come out of.
So you just think they're meant to have babies. That's it. They're just a vessel.
No, it doesn't take any talent to simply reproduce biologically. The wife and mother, who is the chief executive of the home, is entrusted with 3 or 4 or 5 eternal souls.
I'm here as a working journalist, and I'm a mom of 3.
Good for you.
Is that an issue
no.
for you?
No, it's not automatically an issue.
Wilson says in his vision of a Christian society, women as individuals shouldn't be able to vote.
Looking at the leadership page for Christ Church, it's all men. Do you accept women in leadership roles in the church and in government?
In the church, no.
Why?
Because the Bible says not to.
Well, that's not what happens in the Bible. Women do lead all the time.
Progressive faith leader Reverend Jennifer Butler is concerned about Wilson's growing influence.
He is rapidly gaining in power. He has hundreds of churches established around the country. They actually literally want to take over towns and cities, and they have access to this administration.
Reverend. Joining me now, Minister of Christ Church in Moscow, Idaho, Douglas Wilson. I love the interview, Pastor, how mortified she was at the basic teachings that are in the Bible. Should women be in church leadership? No, it's laid out pretty well by Paul.
Right. It kind of just says it right there. Yeah.
No.
And then the lady said, oh, they lead all the time. I think, man, what Bible are you reading?
Well, I actually wanted to ask you about that because I went to Boston recently. I had to go back there for work. And one, it was a beautiful city, I should note. But two, I think every single church I walked past had pride flags hanging on them. Is this a specific denomination problem in the country? How in the world do we end up with female reverends with pride flags dangling from the churches? How did we get here?
Yeah, I think that that's a function of it being in New England. When the settlers landed, when the Puritans built out the superstructure, the interrelationship of church and state and all of that in New England, it was robustly Christian and Bible-believing and so on. But when it went to seed over a century ago in New England, it's what you have in the Bible, where they have the form of religion, but they deny the power of it. Basically, that's what apostasy looks like.
In the interview, she asked you about us being a Christian nation. Here it was.
Is planting a church in D.C. part of your mission to try to turn this into a Christian nation?
Yes. So every society is theocratic. The only question is, who's Theo? In a secular democracy, it would be Demos, the people. In a Christian republic, it'd be Christ.
Well, what would you say to someone watching this to say, look, I'm a Muslim. Who are you to say your worldview is better than mine, that your God is better than mine?
Well, if I went to Saudi Arabia, I would fully expect to live under their God's rules.
But you said earlier that you want this to be a Christian world.
Yes.
So you want to supplant their religion with your Christian.
Yes, by peaceful means, by sharing the gospel. There's a lot of work yet to do. I believe that we are working our little corner of the vineyard.
Was she as mortified by you as it appears in the video?
She was as astonished, right? She was very affable and friendly in person, and I really appreciated interacting with her. But we did astonish her. So a lot of those reaction shots were reactions to things that she wasn't expecting anybody in the modern world to actually say. So it was more surprise than anything else. Just astonishment.
Why are there so few who speak like this now? This is all biblical stuff. None of this stuff shocks me, and none of it would shock anybody who opened up a Bible. Why don't more pastors speak like this now? How did we get so soft?
We were cowed into thinking that it would be possible for us to hold these convictions behind our eyes and between our ears, and then, you know, we'll just believe these things in our faith community, and if we play nice, then they're going to leave us alone. And that was a lie, and it turns out they're not going to leave us alone, and a lot of Christians are starting to wake up. Oh, you know, they're not keeping the they're not keeping their deal. We shouldn't have gone along with the deal in the first place, but doubly so now that they're not keeping it.
No, no doubt. She also asked you about the Supreme Court, gay marriage. Here it was.
What he also wants gone? Same-sex marriage, because he thinks homosexuality is a crime.
In the late 70s and early 80s, sodomy was a felony in all 50 states. That America of that day was not a totalitarian hellhole.
So you would like America to go back to that?
Yep.
Yeah,
that was the Democrat Party's position back in Obama. This is, I mean, where we're at now is new. People don't realize how new it is.
Yeah, it's an utter novelty. And when you read the Obergefell decision, as I have done, Justice Kennedy was just pulling things out of the stratosphere. It was just a remarkable display of arrogance, really. The human race has understood what marriage was for thousands of years, and then there's this fad comes along about the same epistemic level of the hula hoop, right? This fad comes along, everybody's swept up in it, and we start tinkering with ancient law, and we just set it aside for the sake of this cockamamie understanding of marriage. Okay, you know, come on. And then they tried to enforce it afterwards with the cudgel. So anybody who has eyes in their head and knows that male and female together make it possible to have babies, you know, an old school approach to this sort of thing. If anybody is bold enough to say that those sorts of things in public, they get hounded and harassed and fired and made a public display of. It's just astonishing.
It is. Pastor, thank you so much. I appreciate it. You like this kind of stuff? Would you like to hear somebody expand a bit on these things? You know, Mike Slater does a great podcast on that stuff. Politics by Faith. If it interests you, Slater's the man anyway. I love Mike. It's really, really good. It's really, really good. It's refreshing. Doesn't bring you down. Highly recommend you go check out the Politics by Faith podcast. All right? All right. We have Light in the Mood next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And look, there are errors in politics. People make mistakes. All people do. Left, right, middle, everybody makes mistakes. But there are errors, and then there are unforced errors in politics. Remember Elizabeth Warren? It's a great one. When she tried to tell everybody she was an Indian, and then privately, she went and took a DNA test, and the DNA test showed that she was pretty much the whitest person in the history of mankind. Okay, well, it could have ended there, and you would have never known. I would have never known. Then they publicly release the results showing her to be the whitest person on the planet. That's an unforced error. That's an own goal, if you will. So this communist, Mamdani, running for mayor of New York, he decides he's going to get down on the bench and try to bench press 135 pounds. And here's how that went.
This is how you move up in the polls. This is how you move up in the polls. Let's go. Yeah. Let me get three. Yeah.
he can't bench 135 pounds. Okay, but let's set that aside. Some people can't bench press. How do you not know you can do it before you lay down and try? How do you not go to the gym somewhere? Maybe get some people to cover you up just so you can test it and make sure. How do you put that on videotape? I don't know how he comes back from that. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.